This is GamesAtWork.biz with Michael Martin and Michael Rowe, your weekly podcast about gaming technology and play. The thoughts and opinions on this podcast are those of the hosts and guests alone and not the opinions of any organization which we have been, are, or may be affiliated with. This is episode 234, Bots in Cars. Good morning, good evening, good afternoon. Michael Rowe here on a Friday with an exciting, happy, cool, bizarre, sequential episode of GamesAtWork.biz with my friend and co-host Michael Martin.
Hey, Michael. Glad to be here. And it's funny because 234 is one of the things that we used to do in band all the time. So it's kind of cool that that's showing up in our episode number for today.
Yes, yes. So we've got a whole slew of goodness to talk about today. And the first thing is something that I found. And I could have swore you and I talked about this one a while back, but
Well, I know how much you like dragons.
Yeah, I couldn't find it, and it's not in honor of Game of Thrones, right? But it is a South Korea telecom app for, I guess they sponsor one of the local baseball teams, and to showcase that they've upgraded the stadium to 5G, they have enabled an AR app that allows the spectators to see the home team's mascot, a Waverin, come in and breathe fire on the stadium. This was cool.
Oh, yeah, super cool.
And it's dragon.
It looked like a dragon to me, and the thing flying around the stadium. I like the AR integration of it landing on the super big TV screen and crashing into it and having
cracking the screen. That was cool. Yeah.
Yeah. I thought that was pretty awesome. And I liked how the TV was showing what you would see if you were viewing it through your AR device too.
Yes.
So that if you were not looking through your phone at the screen, you could actually see on the TV what was happening. And that reminded me a little bit of the Microsoft pitch that we were talking about with Apollo 11.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And reminded me also too a little bit of that it's more and more common now for apps to be integrated in with the game day experience. So what another neat thing that you could do is sort of the start of every game to do something like this. And you could use people's phones and the app on their phones to create a immersive experience that now becomes part of the team coming out on the court or on the field to do their thing. It's intriguing. Hadn't thought much about it until just now, but wow.
Yeah, you can imagine all the players coming out onto the field and then transforming into large, robotic or other types of anime-type creatures, et cetera. Maybe convert the baseball bat to one of those cool swords that are, three times bigger than the person wielding it. I can just start imagining all kinds of different ways to integrate that in for the on-field experience. Give you a good example of, when they smack the ball and it goes way out over the, outfield. Now you know why. It's because they've got this gigantic baseball bat.
Loving that.
Yeah.
Well,
yeah.
Staying on the AR theme, the next thing that we have to talk about is the Statue of Liberty app. So this was one of the ones that came to my attention. I was just poking around what was in the iOS App Store, and knowing that I'm interested in AR, it was prompted. And it's like, oh, well, this is pretty cool. So I downloaded it, and I managed to do a really quick take on using it too. And like most of the AR apps, you got to first find a flat surface somewhere like the floor or whatever, and then you can do a number of interesting things. So the AR experience for this allow you to take a look at what the torch looks like from the Statue of Liberty and to kind of be close to it. And you can hear my voice kind of moving around a little bit, because when I move my phone, I can see different views of Ellis Island end of the skyline of New York City, and I can look at the sunset, or I can look at it in the morning or twilight or night. And that's kind of a neat way of experiencing the Statue of Liberty and views of it that you couldn't ordinarily have. It's, you know, you can't go up in the torch now anyway, and you can't see the torch on kind of eye level from the outside, because you'd have to have some sort of hover jetpack thing to do that. So it's neat to be able to do it, but I'd say also on the flip side, it almost might be better to do this sort of in a virtual reality mode as opposed to an AR mode. And I guess it is a little bit more VR than AR, because you're not seeing the world behind it. You're seeing the skyline of the city, and you're seeing the torch.
Huh. Well, yeah, I saw this app. I haven't had a chance to install it yet. I will probably do that over the weekend to look at. And I'm looking at kind of some of the content that they show on the App Store. Do they actually show the... I wonder if they actually show the transition from the original kind of brass-looking... view.
Oh, yeah,
it's slowly turning green. Yeah,
exactly. Yes, that was one of the things I saw in the original video, but I've not seen it in the app just yet. As the statue oxidizes, that's where you get the classic current green, and it shows you can kind of go through time, so you can see when the statue was first stood up in the harbor in New York, and what the cityscape looked like at that time.
Oh, that's
and
cool.
As you see the buildings grow. You also see the statue turning green, which is kind of neat.
Yeah, see, so that's
cool education.
That'll be something I will like to play with and understand, because I'm a history buff. I think I've been to the Statue of Liberty. One time that I went to it in high school, you were still able to get into the crown. Mm-hmm. But they had just recently closed the torch for some renovations. And now, yep. As you say, the torch is, no, you can't get there anyway. So yeah. I missed it all the way around timing-wise.
Well, I it's funny because I lived in that area for a long time, and we never, ever went to the Statue of Liberty. So at some point, I would like to go, but I've never physically
you've
been
never
there.
Oh, man, that's a real bummer. The last time I went, you were able to pretty much just go into the pedestal. It was that.
Oh, really?
Yeah, jeez. I'm like, well, that's kind of defeats the whole experience. But speaking of other cool AR, you found a tweet this week from Nicholas Grana, you explain it. This was so cool. I really got into it. This was cool. Go ahead.
Yeah, well, I did too. And shout out to our good buddy Epred, Ian, for being the one who retweeted this the first time. So the point here, or what he found, was a short video of an iMac in augmented reality. So the deal is that you're pointing at a desk that is devoid of anything but a keyboard, and then an iMac appears that you can begin to interact with via AR kit. And the question in the tweet from Nicholas that he posts are, maybe desktops can be replaced by AR. And Michael, you might remember when we were playing in Second Life some time ago, there was a similar construct there where you could create a computer in the Second Life environment, and that computer had the full functionality of a computer in real life too.
It was almost like it was a computer in a computer pretending to be a computer.
To make the computer.
Yeah, no, I remember that. And if I remember it correctly, it was actually they had written like a very basic, simple computer operating system in the scripting language of Second Life and put that interface on a prim, versus what a lot of us would do, which would be actually put a web portal on a prim and have that web portal actually just be pointing to a virtual machine, right? Rendering out a full blown computer. So that was what was so cool about it, was it really was someone had written very early basic operating system and a computer and putting it into the world. But this is really cool. When I saw it and I was watching, I was like, okay, having played a little bit with ARKit myself, not being anywhere near good at it, from a programming perspective, it's amazing to me what he's showing. What I'd really like to know is what it actually is doing, because it's like a pre-Retina iMac because of the thickness of the screen, right? You can tell that. And what he's doing on the keyboard is being reflected into the iMac screen in AR. And I believe even some of his touch maneuvers are reflected as mouse movements in the screen. So is it a fully functioning virtual machine that's being displayed in this three-dimensional image, or is it pretty canned, right? Would be interesting to see the code, because, you know, the code is the source of truth here.
It is, but let's flash forward to what this portends, right? So whatever's in this image, which may or may not be a real machine, it's not too difficult to imagine having in a virtual machine, in a virtual AR machine, hybrid cloud, blah, 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 that you're able to represent the power of a computer that way. So if you had a pair of augmented reality viewing instrumentation, you can imagine yourself being able to use said computer that doesn't really exist except in the augmented reality space. So do you then really need to have hardware if you could say, for example, I've got a physical keyboard that I can interact with and type, and the connection from that physical keyboard through the internets connecting into my augmented reality environment would allow me to interact on a computer without me having to actually buy or transmit or construct the computer somewhere else and ship it around the planet to get to me.
No, and like I said, that was kind of what we would do early on in Second Life, right? You would have a virtual machine running somewhere up in the cloud and project that. And that's exactly what this shows conceptually. But what I really wanted to know was how much real processing is going on where. Or was it a canned demo? I get it. I agree with you 100%. It projects a future where this could be the way you access a very large screen or a very powerful computer, right? You need a good enough computer to do AR, and that could be a pair of glasses and a cell phone for that matter, right? And then you need somewhere up in the cloud a machine that's powerful enough to handle everything else.
And it seems like Ian actually, goes to that too. So his reply to this particular post says, one of the use cases I often try to get enterprises interested in AR is a removal of the capital expenditure on multiple screens and larger desks for employees. You can take your multi-screen setup to any desk, coffee shop, home office, or inside of an on-demand autonomous vehicle.
Well, what's funny, one of the very first really cool technologies I saw when I first joined IBM, and gosh, this was, let's say I've got an intern right now who was born after I started working at IBM.
That's scary.
Yeah, and I was like, what? Anyway, so was a prototype device that was a little bit larger than a current cell phone that you would carry around in your pocket, and then you went to wherever, any coffee shop, hotel, office, whatever, and you would drop this in a cradle, right? And it would have all the technology you need. And what this says is, why don't we get rid of the docking part, right? And just throw it up in AR.
Yeah. Yep.
So cool stuff.
I remember that too. Really cool. Yeah. All right, so kicking right back to you, instead of just looking at one computer on a desktop, what if you could do this for the whole Earth?
Yeah.
So Minecraft Earth.
Yeah.
talk, Talk about this a little bit, Michael.
So I saw this one a week or so ago. I've heard a couple of people start talking about it. There will be, starting sometime this summer, a beta for Microsoft's Minecraft Earth, I think they call it, which will be a AR application on mobile devices that allow you to render Minecraft objects in the real world, place them, leave them behind, etc. And you remember, I guess it was February, we were talking about, I think it was Adobe, that allowed you to draw three-dimensional things in space and leaving them there so other people with their devices, you know, would find it. Imagine the power and the excitement experience that many people have playing with Minecraft, but now bringing that out into the real world to allow people to interact with those objects, etc. I've done a little bit of Minecraft, not a lot. I would not call myself an expert or a devotee at all, but I can really imagine the appeal for this one.
That's pretty neat. I was just taking a quick look at the article too. So the whole idea of leaving virtual breadcrumbs in physical places, you know, is not new. We've seen plenty of examples of that, but being able to do these builds could be really pretty cool. And then with all the mobs and animals and so on that exist within Minecraft, that could be also kind of fun to have a pig farm that you put somewhere. And then you, when you're looking at it in the Minecraft Earth, you can see all the pigs running around. So it can be fun.
Yeah. Love I love it. I think this is another great way of getting people outdoors and engaging with the, quote, real world, even if it's only an augmentation to it. But speaking of that, right, let's take that into the enterprise. And we've talked about this many years ago, and I was
one of the first to actually buy one.
I was going to say an early adopter of Google Glass, and it kind of fell off the face of the earth in most people's minds, but they've been busy and working and continuing to go forward with Google Glass, and they have finally released their Enterprise Edition version 2, which actually looks much more enterprise, right? You know, they kind of look like safety glasses now, with the built-in lenses, so you can, you know, do your regular glasses, which was a big problem for me because I kept having to either try to balance it over my glasses frame, or I did some 3D printing to try to connect it to my glasses frame, which caused the sensors on the side to be a little bit flaky and come on and off when they shouldn't because it wasn't pressed correctly against the temple and all kinds of weirdness. But this is exciting. I could not find a price tag easily on the site, but I'm really, really glad that they are continuing to move this forward and increasing its capabilities. And you know, it does make sense as an enterprise technology. What do you think of it? I know you're just looking at it from a view perspective, but it would be kind of interesting to see what your take is.
Yeah, well, when I first saw the blog post, I was immediately intrigued. I thought I saw a price of the low price of $9.99 U.S. dollars. In case you're wondering which currency, that seemed to be kind of right about the same price point. That was what you paid for the first edition, wasn't it?
Like, no, that's 50% off of what I paid for the first edition. It was $1,500.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. I forgot.
Yeah.
So that's what I thought I saw for it. The level of compute power that's embedded within it, it seems to be intriguing to me, and it's much more substantial, I guess, is the feeling that I had, that I saw it. And what I also liked about it was that you could wear it with other glasses because you could get it just in the frame version. The thing that kind of struck me was sticking with the projection lens over one eye, like the first edition, was another interesting thing. And that was something, I don't know, when we think about user adoption and you think about the other people and how they react to you.
Yeah.
Wearing a pair of ski goggles, like you might see from a HoloLens or Magic or some of these other, you know, Magic Leap, does definitely scream, hey, I'm looking at reality through other lenses and you can all tell. This is a little more subtle, and there are aspects of that that I like. But the flip side of it is that I could still see where it's going to be problematic, where your field of vision and your focal length on that one eye, on I guess it's the right eye, would constantly be looking up into that little window to see the augmentation. And I'm curious to know, Michael, if that was something that you caught yourself doing a lot when you were in your early adopter phase, or if that's something you're like, yeah, not really.
No, that wasn't a problem. Actually, I actually thought it was good that it was kind of up and out of the way, right? Mm-hmm. If
didn't
I
get in your field of vision, if you didn't need it, right?
Exactly. And mm-hmm. So, I mean, you and I both wear glasses, and how often yep. do you look up and see the frame of your glasses until you start thinking about it? And then you're like, oh man, I can see my frame of my glasses, right?
Yeah.
Because you're not focused there. And so it really becomes just a focus thing.
Right.
And from that perspective, it makes sense.
Well, I'm glad to see Google is still on it, and I'm glad to see this come out as a, all right, let's keep on going, because that camera and the projection system in and of itself are right exactly where I want the future to be, which is not holding up a phone or a tablet in front of your face, but rather moving that out of the way and being able to leverage it directly.
Yeah. Yeah. Good stuff.
So you could see the use cases for this to be something really easy in a warehouse for folks that are doing picking and packing. And I think that's maybe one of the things that attracted both of us to the following article, which deals with how Amazon is making games for engagement of their workers on the warehouse floor, because whereas the people used to be wandering around the warehouse to do picking and packing, now the shelves come to them. And that's speeding them up in terms of being able to identify the products and getting them boxed and moved out faster, because that's still a important human aspect of the job. But they were finding that to remain engaged and involved and to challenge one warehouse maybe against another warehouse, that these games that Amazon designed were helping people to achieve greater productivity heights. So that seemed intriguing to me, because it is using game mechanics for productivity use cases and tying in the output of a job into the game per se. But you had a slightly different take on that, as I recall.
Yeah. I when I saw this article, I kind of went all the way back to our very first discussions about this, our old Dancing with Wookiees, and yeah. how I used to think, you know, it'd be really great. You do gamification and you kind of level up as a programmer and you compete with other people, etc. And then I'm like, and we've gotten to the point where it's going to be, I want to get more points in my point basket picking and packing than you get, and maybe I'll get, you know, a pellet, a food pellet at the end of the day. So I went immediately to the most, oh my God, have we gotten to this point? Has gamification gone too far? And it's going to be fun because I come into work and I get to pick and pack, right? Which is one yeah. of those jobs that I'm glad people do it. I'm glad people get paid to do it. I think, you know, bless them for doing it. To me, it would be so mind-numbing. I would want to just, like, explode. And trying to turn that in a game just, like, hit every one of my negative bullets. So I immediately went there. I was like, no, don't do this. Don't do this. Don't try to make it fun. It's picking and packing. It's not a game.
So. Well, I mean, one of the intriguing aspects of the article was the dynamic changes for how the game might create reward conditions. So if you're successful in doing whatever task you are doing, it can ratchet it up a little bit, which reminds me, for example, the Apple Watch. If you're closing your rings it might tell you, hey, you're closing your rings on a regular basis. Why not try for a little additional challenge of, you know, this many extra steps or calories or, you know, whatever.
Well, I know for the longest time I was hitting my calorie target every day on burns. And so I was moving it up and moving it up and moving it up, you know, time and time again. And it finally got to a point where it's like, no, because then I would feel bad on any day that I missed it. And it's like, you know, this is X number of calories way and above what I'm taking in. And I work. I'm at work. I can't go for a jog in the middle of the day to get that number. So, yeah. So at a point, it was good. And at another point, it was getting to be a competition with myself that I felt like I was losing.
Yes. Yeah, it could. And some of these, you know, ways of doing the quantified self when it comes to work output like this could could have the same kind of results. And I see too that Jane McGonigal was actually quoted in here too. Her quote for the article was, "Competition is only enjoyable for a short time. As soon as workers start underperforming against their colleagues, it becomes less fun and can actually be counterproductive." So, you know, when someone like Jane talks about games, she knows whereof she speaks, doesn't
yes.
she?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. And then you will have the people who will purposely underperform, right? So.
Yes, exactly. So the next thing as it comes to games talks about gerrymandering as a game too. So without diving too deeply into the politics thereof, but being from a state, North Carolina, who is going through the Supreme Court, you know, process right now around how congressional districts are set up, it was fun to read that there was a game that was called, that was created, Kickstarter, Gerrymandering the Game. And I actually haven't looked at the game per se just yet, but I was intrigued by understanding a little bit more about how it transpired, how a couple of high school kids took a look at this and said, hey, we can create a game around it and create the game mechanics to make it kind of fun. Apparently, Arnold Schwarzenegger got intrigued about this particular thing too, tweeted about it, and that just spun the Kickstarter, you know, way on up, and that was pretty fun.
Yeah, this I thought this was really, really cool. I also have not had a chance to play the game or check out their Kickstarter, but I do think, you know, this is good because it's taking something educational, something fun, and putting a spin on it to make it engaging, right? So I will have to check it out. Hopefully there'll be some online gameplay somewhere. But just like you, the interesting part to me was, you know, how it got kicked off, not kickstarted, by these high school students to actually build it. And, you know, they were players of Settlers of Catan and other board games. So I have hope and desire that it has a little bit of that vibe too, right? You know, to really make it engaging. But I think using gaming mechanics for something like this, where you're trying to educate and explain a complex behavior, political behavior, to me makes sense because, you know, it's like they say, you know, gerrymandering's all fun and good until you're on the losing side.
the other piece that I was happy to see here too is that the team that was involved in the game actually interviewed and collaborated with a number of people, including one of my classmates or same time classmates at science and math at the school here in Durham, Jonathan Mattingly, who's currently at Duke University and has actually testified before the Supreme Court too on this particular topic. So it's really pretty cool to see how games are used in all of these different places.
Yep.
Now being able to play games on various platforms is kind of an important thing, and Steam has really emerged as a way to distribute games and make use of them. But part of the problem with Steam is you need a computer for that. You found an article that said, well, maybe not.
Well, this was, so this app was developed and then pulled from the Apple App Store for a while due to violations in app development guidelines. So what this allows you to do is, if you have a Steam account and you have games installed on your desktop, then you can use your iOS mobile device to play those games when you're on the same network, and even use your mobile device maybe as a game controller. I've got some Steam games. Matter of fact, one that I got this Christmas, I think we talked about on the game on the show a while back, was kind of like a chess-like game where your chess and time travel together, and you're killing off the invasion of these insect creatures, and you level up your characters, you level up your equipment, etc. And I thought, well, that'd be kind of cool to test it out with. So I've actually installed this on my iOS device. I've done the update on my desktop that has Steam installed on it, but I've not been successful with it yet. There appears to be some kind of conflicts going on between the Steam software and the remote desktop software that I use to do remote connections to my iMac when I'm on the road and need to pull files off or do updates or do something else, right? You know, do some troubleshooting for people. So I have it. I don't have it working yet, and I hope to get it working well enough to actually describe it in better detail. The concept is really cool.
Do you have your, well, I think you do. You have your PC hardwired to your router, right?
Yep.
Mm. Well, interesting. I have my kids have played Steam games. I have not personally myself, but this seems like a neat way to be able to link it up so you're able to play it on more platforms. So that's pretty cool.
Yeah, yeah. It looks cool. Like I said, it was rejected at one point on the App Store, which is how the name popped up in some of the other stuff that I was looking at. And then when they released it again, I was like, I've got to check it out. So it kind of doesn't work yet for me.
And sometimes you got to do that pretty fast. When you see something, you know, yeah, it's like, grab it before it goes away.
But you found, speaking of games, another thing, Playdate. What is this?
Yeah, it's a new platform. So what was interesting here is that there's a company called Panic, and they've been developing games now for a while. And they said, look, we could create our own platform for it if we wanted to, and why not? So they decided to do it, and they have. And what's really cool about this is it's a little Game Boy-esque gaming platform, if you will. It has the classic D-pad and the A and B buttons, and it has a crank on the side. So I'm sure there's going to be some kind of a fishing game. There's a fun little game about a time manipulation where you move forward in time by cranking forward, you move backwards in time by cranking backwards. And it looked like a really neat new way to play some games on the go on something other than a phone. So the screen's black and white. It should be probably low power. Maybe there's a way to power it by cranking it for the battery purposes. I don't know. I've only done just a little bit of looking at it, but did I sign up for being notified when it's ready and available? You betcha.
Yeah, I saw that. I'm not big into carrying around extra devices to play games, right? You know, even if it's a Nintendo Switch or a Game Boy or, you know, any of those devices.
Because you have a phone. And
I have a phone and a tablet, right? And it's all good enough, right? It's just like, you know, I had a Nintendo Wii, but, you know, never got into the PS2, 3, or 4, the Xbox, or any of those. I get it. I'm glad it, but...
I played a lot of Tetris on my Game Boy.
I'm sure you did.
A lot of Tetris.
So, speaking of... Yeah. So speaking of one more cool thing. Do you like this little movie franchise? I think it's like Star Wars. That's it, right?
Oh, yeah. I heard about that.
Yeah. So big announcement happening out at Disneyland this summer is the rollout of their Star Wars themed area called Galaxy's Edge. And someone has posted a 360 video of the Galaxy's Edge Millennium Falcon location called Smuggler's Run. And I think this is a ride. I'm not sure. I haven't been to Disneyland. But being a Star Wars fan, this is cool. This is cool. And the video actually lets you kind of zoom and pan in from one location in the Millennium Falcon and get a view of the way everything looks. I don't know if you had a chance to look at the video.
Actually I did, which is pretty cool. And, hey. What I like about it is that you're able to interact with it quite a bit. What I suspect though, from what I've read, is that the opportunity to sit down and play a little game of holochess is not highly likely, because there's a lot of people that are going to be going into the Star Wars land at Disney, so much so that they will have stormtroopers escort people out when they've overstayed their welcome, especially in the beginning, because you're time limited for how long you can be in the environment.
Yeah, I heard that too. They said it's like after 4 hours, the stormtroopers will escort you out.
So you got to wonder how that's going to work. You know, do you think people are going to have like a wristband or something, and then maybe it'll change color, and you know, then the stormtroopers will find you and get rid of you?
No, I think it's Google Glass, right, in their helmets, and they'll have a video overlay with augmented reality that just highlight your face and say, you're not the guest we're looking for.
Well, you know, so before we wrap up, and I know we're just about at time, there was another article that both you and I found very intriguing. So it wouldn't be a show without us talking a little bit about bots.
And robots.
And robots.
And self-driving cars.
a self-driving car that deploys a robot to take the package, I won't say the last mile, maybe it's like the last 10 feet from your driveway, from the truck to your door. Really pretty cool how this robot folds up and goes in the back of your car, or the back of the car that's autonomously driven, taking the package, delivering it to you.
Well, you can just imagine UPS connecting drone planes to these autonomous vehicles that drive on the road to a autonomous robot that picks up the package and carries it to your door. I mean,
and the way it walks is like a little Boston Dynamics-ish, isn't it?
Yep.
Did you see that too?
Yeah. Yeah. I am amazed, though, the one animated GIF that they have in the story of showing it unfold coming out of the car, the angle that they show it, they actually hide the arm that moves it in and out. So it kind of looks like it just floats out.
Well, it reminded me quite a lot of the Star Wars droids.
Yes.
That would be deployed. And
in the Phantom Menace.
In Phantom Menace, exactly. So it's reality is mirroring Star Trek, Star Wars, etc. yet again.
Or was it Yeti again?
Well, maybe so, because I have my Yeti. Right.
Exactly.
Here.
Well, it's been great doing another show this week, we look forward to getting your comments, your feedback over at gamesatwork.biz, at Twitter at gamesatwork_biz, or over at our Facebook page at gamesatwork.biz.
Thanks for joining. See ya.
Bye.
You've been listening to gamesatwork.biz, the podcast about gaming technology and play. We are part of the Blueberry Podcasting Network, and would like to thank the band Random Encounters for their song, Big Blue. You can follow us on Twitter at gamesatwork_biz or at our website at gamesatwork.biz.